Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Just a couple of weeks ago, Kalima Young was in the studio and we had this conversation about rape culture. And after the program, we started talking about how pervasive this idea is, and talked about the idea of doing an ongoing conversation about what that means in our worlds and why it is and what that really means. And as I was reading it, I also began reading a lot of articles over the last couple of weeks. This is also an onslaught against even the whole notion of rape culture on campuses in our society. So it really is a debate, and my own children are involved in that debate, leading their own struggles on their own campuses around this issue. And so I realize how deep and important – I've always known how deep and important the notion of misogyny and rape culture were. Not the idea of rape culture is relatively new, at least for me. But I think we really have to explore it, especially as a man talking to other men. We have to explore this in some deep ways. So Kalima Young is back with us, instructor at Taos University and University of Brown College Park, where she's getting her PhD in American Studies. Good to have you here. And thanks. Dr. Desiree Melton is with us. Desiree, of course, is associate professor of philosophy and associate director of the APA Site Visit Program at the School of Arts and Sciences at Notre Dame of Maryland University. Good to have you back, Desiree.
Good to be here.
And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. You can write to us at talk@steinershow.org by email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, log onto our Facebook pages. But do jump into it as you hear the conversation unfold. So let's talk a bit about how this whole thing came to be and why we're doing this.
Yeah, well, after our conversation about the Stanford rape case and about Brock, it just became very apparent that in our conversations around sexual violence and our conversations about gender-based violence, we don't quite understand the scope and how pervasive it truly is, and how that there is this understanding of, there is this culture that allows sexual violence and gender-based violence to exist, and that our inability to see people as victims, our inability to read certain things that happen in our world, is our inability to acknowledge rape culture. I think about last year when we were talking about the McKinney pool party, and how I think Michelle Love, the poet, and some other people
with the young black girl was thrown to the ground by the police officer.
He sat on top of her.
Right, we
were in this studio talking about the fact that we as black women saw that as sexual violence, but no one else had that conversation or understanding of sexual violence.
Right.
So that's why we feel like it's extremely important to actually talk about it, because is it okay if I give a bit of a description or definition of rape culture?
Fine.
Okay. So Susan Brown Miller, in 1975, she argued that our nation's cultural output promotes a climate in which acts of sexual hostility directed against women are not tolerated but ideologically encouraged. And when we're thinking about rape culture, what we're talking about how we minimize, normalize, and trivialize sexual violence in our everyday lives. So rape culture isn't about rape hysteria. It's not about making a big deal about rape. It's about understanding how we take sexual violence and how we minimize it, we trivialize it, and we normalize it in our everyday practices, in our everyday ways that we interact with one another, and the everyday ways that we talk about sexual violence and sexual consent. And that's what I really think is extremely important for us to begin to recognize and to address, because every 2 minutes, someone in America is sexually violated, sexually assaulted. And one out of every 6 American women has been a victim of an attempted or completed sexual assault.
And that number, may I just interrupt?
Yes, please do.
That number, I think, is absurdly low. Mm-hmm. If I can only speak anecdotally.
Yes, please do.
From the women in my worlds, from the women in my family, that I can't think of a woman that I'm close to almost where she has not had an attempted rape, a sexual assault, mm-hmm. unwanted touching, or a rape.
Right.
And I'm talking from my sister on to everybody that I know.
Right.
And so, I mean, to say 1 out of 6, I wish someone could actually figure out how to do a study, Desiree, that gets to mm-hmm. the reality. Mm-hmm. That we, you know, 1 out of 6. It's not real.
Right.
But I think you're alluding to a part of the issue, right? It's because we think about, when we're talking about rape culture, and maybe it's just the problem with the terminology, but it's the culture that allows, that normalizes sexual assault and violence against women. But you also have to talk about the fact that we often think that rape is stranger rape. Mm-hmm. Never anyone in the family. You know, it can't be your boyfriend. It can't be an uncle. It can't be, you know, the neighbor. None of that. It's always a stranger attacking some woman in a dark alley. But that's not what rape is. Right. And so if you're going to, I think there's 1 in 6. I think it's also low, but I think it's because it's underreported, because people tend to think, women and men tend to think that rape is stranger rape.
Right.
And they, you know, there's that gray area, the right. rape gray area, right, that people are talking about, that it can happen, you know, if there's excessive drinking or, mm-hmm. you know, it used to be called date rape. I don't really see that term used that much anymore.
I remember date, right?
It was used a lot more like in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. But it's how we characterize rape. We right. still think of it as a stranger rape, and that's not the only kind of rape there is, obviously.
Right.
So maybe that's a reason why that 1 in 6 number is so low. It's because it's being underreported,
right?
Because it's not being recognized as rape,
right? And that is one of the key issues. If it's not being recognized as sexual violence, if a young person who experiences unwanted touching by another young person or adult is not able to be given the tools to recognize that as sexual violence, if partners who are together and one person chooses to have sex with the other person without that other person's consent is not recognized as sexual violence. All of these different ways that we minimize or obscure what it means to be in this society and to experience unwanted sexual touching and assault speaks to rape culture, and that's why we need to illuminate it on the show.
So I'm going to come back to this definition and why it's so hard and why the battle is so deep around this notion of rape culture, which is different, which is a huge both pragmatic and philosophical approach to who we are as human beings. That's why I want to understand exactly what we're talking about here and what you two mean by that and what people mean by that. 410-319-8888. Let me just say to our listeners, as we have these ongoing conversations, you can feel free to call and feel free not to give your name. If you have something to say, and would rather not be identified. I'll be saying that during all these programs that we do. Just feel free to join the conversation at any level that you like, or just to write in at talk@steinershow.org, not using your name, or as tweeting the same way. Just, you know, just we will respect that. So just saying that out there. So let's get into why to say there's a culture of rape mm-hmm. is what we're saying, is what you all are saying, what many people are saying.
Right.
So what does that mean in its depth? What does that mean in its definition, in its history? What do we mean by a culture of rape? What does that mean?
I would venture to say, and everybody please weigh in.
Yeah, right.
You know, I would venture to say when we think about culture, we have to first understand what we mean when we're talking about culture. Culture is our standards and our practices, our value systems, our ideologies, our beliefs, and that this conversation around rape and sexual violence permeates all of those things. It permeates our ideologies and our value systems. It permeates our criminal justice system. It permeates our healthcare system. This is our culture. And when we have a culture that says we're going to misrecognize bodily violation in every single space, you know, in our value systems, in our ideologies, in our economic systems, in our healthcare systems. That's what we mean when we're talking about a rape culture. We perpetuate it ongoing through many different layers.
Does Ray, you want to add that before you open the phones here?
Yeah. And so when you're talking about culture and talking about the practices and values of a society, I think, and you mentioned physical, but it's not just physical, mm-hmm. right? It's how women and girls are told to modify their behavior so as not to tempt
and boys. And gender non-conforming and
right,
trans folks.
Right, taught to, but I'm talking specifically, what I was about to get to was like, I'm thinking about what happens in the public schools and the uniforms and girls. Mm-hmm. And normally they're girls taught that they can't wear certain clothing because they may be tempting the boys in the class. I mean, we've heard this in many cities around the nation where girls have been sent home because their collarbones are showing. And they say that that's too distracting and tempting for the boys in the class. They can't concentrate. So mm-hmm. that sort of behavior modification that girls and women are urged to do, that circles back to the values because it says that women and girls are responsible for their assault or the improper touching or all of that, and that it's not instead of telling boys and men that they need to adjust their behavior, that they need to not rape, we teach girls and women not to be raped. So there's this, the onus is on girls and women to not make themselves a victim. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of our rape culture. Catcalling, street harassment, all of those sorts of things are part of it. And so, again, I think that rape culture may be that terminology just might be kind of clunky and maybe difficult for some people to wrap their heads around to right. encompass all of these things because they just think rape. But what rape culture is it sets the stage for sexual assault and violence against women to be normalized.
Right. Collective minimization, like collectively right. minimizing sexual violence in our lives and in our families and our family histories.
Well, it could part of it, then we're going to open the phones here. Helen, you're the first caller up. We're going to come right to you right here before we get too deep into the program. But, I mean, I think that – and there will be many more chances to talk about this over the coming months. But maybe part of it has to do with that the whole idea, the whole concept of gender equality mm-hmm. right, between men and women mm-hmm. is relatively new. In this world, right? I mean, there have been some traditional societies where there've been people more equal, but even I mean that all that's true. But I'm thinking, as a whole, mm-hmm. that most societies are male dominated, or patriarchal, where you can have more than one wife and have other people outside, and nothing doesn't make any difference, mm-hmm. And that women are there to satisfy men's needs. Mm-hmm. Even though you read some biblical things and it's very complex with a woman has to be as satisfied as a man. All that stuff's in the Bible too, by the way. And then the whole
we pick and choose, right?
We pick and choose, right? We do pick and choose. But having said that, that and here we are now in a world where women – where that line has been crossed and smashed in many ways, that idea. Mm-hmm. Of equality is here, but that what fueled our society was something very different. And that to me is where why I think we're having this explosive thing right now mm. is the rise in consciousness, but that doesn't affect the world.
Right.
Am I being clear? I didn't mean to be too obtuse here.
No, no. I think you're being clear. But women and queer people and LGBT folks have been working on illuminating the conversation of sexual violence and what it means and how it's permeated society for a very long time. I think that it's interesting. I think a lot of our awareness of it is the inundation of so many different stories. We're inundated with so many different kinds of stories now than what we used to have, that people are like, oh, there's suddenly this new phenomenon and people are suddenly working on it. But people have been working to illuminate these issues for well over 40 years.
Oh, no, no, exactly. No. Yeah. I remember completely. Yeah. And I think that's real. That's why we are right now. We're dealing with this culture of rape, Desiree. And here I'm going to open the phones. It's being pushed to the point now where we're forcing a confrontation over things that have been ignored,
right.
that people don't want to address.
Right.
We're talking about it more now than we used to.
Right.
Right.
Let me open the phones and come back to this. 410-319-8888. Helen, you're on the air.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning,
everyone.
Helen.
Might get in trouble for saying this.
What's that? No? Go ahead.
However, I think that there's an appetite for aggression from men. There's an appetite for different types of role plays, if you will, and that nobody seems to be addressing the fact that this may be something a woman wants. This may be something a man desires to give. And if he doesn't give it, then he is looked at as a weakling. We got 1 billion women strong against sexual violence. All over the world, men assume that it's their right to have a woman any kind of way he wants. With impunity, with no consequence from young women, little girls, to big adult women, that a man thinks that we are property, that we have no voice in the decisions that he intends to make in our behalf. And it just worries me that there are women who desire or have an appetite for an aggressive man, And then it's an encouragement for men to be even more aggressive. I think that there is an appetite for submissive women, for men that are submissive themselves. I don't think that we are really talking about sometimes about how we exercise our appetite for sex, and that there is some box that we have to fit into in order to be accepted. And when the reality is what grown people do in the privacy of their own home, in the privacy of their bedrooms where the door is closed. I don't think that too many of us have the right to step in and exercise our opinion about
right. Helen, you raised a plethora of complex things here.
Most definitely. I don't think anyone in this room would ever think that there should be that conversations about people's sexual proclivities, people's sexual desires are things that need to be pathologized.
Or regulated.
Ever. Yeah. Like, I would never come from that particular stance. I think this is a conversation, though. I think you're very real that we need to have an actual conversation about sexuality and what it is and what it means, and that there's a difference between sexuality and sexual desire and non-consenting sexual violation, that these are different animals.
And she also raised the point about toxic masculinity. That's where she began. Right. And that's not the same thing as... Right.
That's not the same thing as sexual appetites. That's not the same thing as sexual mores. That's not the same thing as a healthy, diverse sexual practice.
And I think she also just talked to the complexity of where it is. I think that's part of why there's so much pushback on rape culture notion is because it is complex and people really don't know how to wrestle with this.
Right.
And I think it may be, and I think what she's also alluding to is it may be confusing for people. And I think this is what she was saying. It may be confusing for some people who want to be more submissive or dominant in the bedroom with their consenting partner, that may be confusing if we're talking about aggression and dominance with someone who sexually assaults.
Right.
It's not the same thing, but it can be confusing.
And there's a difference between consenting.
Exactly.
Right.
Consent.
Consent, the big one, right? This mutual understanding that there's sexuality, there is a role that is being played, there are rules and around how it's going to work out.
Right.
And what we're talking about is these things happening without consent. And it's extremely important, especially as it relates to young people and children, to educate young people early about sexual desire and sexuality in general, so that folks have a healthy understanding of what they should and can and cannot do or should not do with their bodies.
Right.
And when and with whom.
And Kalima and I were talking about this a little bit in the green one room where we talked about that we need to teach girls and boys. We need to teach, but I think particularly girls, that there's a, if you enjoy sex, it does not mean you're a slut.
Right.
And if you don't have sex, it does not mean that you're a prude. So there's these, you know, there are these poles. Right. You're either a slut or you're a prude.
Right.
And we need to teach the girls more about sexuality and knowing their bodies and understanding what they desire and what they like. That's really important too.
And you have to teach men.
Exactly.
The same exact thing.
Right.
And that your sexual desires as a man, whatever makes that happen for you as a man, does not mean you have the right to do things without consent and just snatching up, as people would say, a piece because you want it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That there's a difference between what turns you on and what you act upon without consent.
Right.
That's also, you know, that's.
Right. And I also, and it's extremely important for men as well, because 3% of American men experience sexual violence, 1 in 33.
And probably more than that.
And if we think about prison culture, where 80% of folks in prison have experienced sexual violence, men have experienced sexual violence, there's a conversation about bodily autonomy that needs to be had across all spectrums.
And many of those men had sexual violence against them when they were boys.
Exactly. So then we have to think about the culture of saying, yes, you're 13 years old and you had sex, and that means that you have sexual prowess. What if that girl was 17 years old?
But that's the toxic masculinity part, right?
Right.
And this is the reason why maybe some men don't come forward saying they were abused as children, as boys, because they're embarrassed, right? That means that they're weak, submissive.
We have to be able to, I mean, there was a piece on Facebook the other day we're going to talk about next week with a dear friend who wrote on Facebook, Quincy Gamble, who talked about his depression man who I really respect a lot, to be able to come out with that and talk about that. Men have to deal with their masculinity and all these things that we're afraid to talk about. You're no longer being a man because of.
Right.
You know, let me do this. We're almost running out of time. This is too short a piece today. But to define where this conversation is going to be going, I want you to do that. Let's get a quick call in there and then we'll do that, all right?
Okay.
Kadria, you're on the air. Kadria, you're on the air.
Subject. All the thoughts that are you talking about the men being raped in prison, all this is on my mind. If rape is a crime, then all the men who rape other men in prison need to be set to task, okay? My solution is, I said this before, in some countries around the world, in their normal state, not this war-torn mess that's going on all over, rape is a capital crime. In the religion of Islam, the Sharia law, the punishment for rape is public castration. Not 10 days later, not 15 years later, but when caught the next same day. That's a good solution. No man wants to live without their member, okay? Absolutely right. I believe most of these men that dysfunctional, rape boys and all that, this has been done to them as little boys. It's never been talked about. An actual average man, I believe, will go to his grave before he talks about this. The women are more apt, much, to come out and talk about their experience than men, because it's a shame to them as a man. So, you know, it all reflects on this 666 society, which is really not the culture of black people, but a culture that we have been now baptized in, where you just go and violate and do whatever you want. But like I say, the whole solution to rape, you women, you outnumber the men, catch them like they did in Soweto. Catch them, you castrate them, or you beat the hell out of them.
Thank you, Kedra. I think that the problem with castration, which is, you know, I mean, people think it's a legitimate solution, but that doesn't stop the violence.
Right.
No, it doesn't.
You can chop somebody's penis off, you can chop their testicles off, but that doesn't stop them from being violent or attacking women.
And it doesn't do anything about rape culture.
Right. It doesn't do anything about rape culture.
It doesn't do a thing.
So talk a bit about where we're going with this. Before, so we can get another caller and we've been talking.
All right. We have a couple of different ways that we're going to be approaching this over the next few months. We're going to be talking more about defining and expanding this notion of rape culture. We're going to talk about rape culture and its current initiatives, especially the way it's gained a lot of traction in college campuses. We're going to talk about rape narratives and understanding and recognizing what rape narratives are all about and how we can actually debunk them. We're going to talk about sexual violence in marginalized communities, how they're definitely impacting LGBTQ folks, trans folks, women who are incarcerated. We're going to queer our conversation of sexual violence in terms of talking about models of community accountability that sometimes happens in spaces where you can't necessarily trust the carceral system. And we're going to talk about how we expand the entire conversation around recognizing and understanding sexual violence to include all people are impacted, which means every person on this planet, regardless of their sexuality, race, gender, creed, capital, and all of the other
things. Do you want to add to that this way before we...
That's really broad, I know.
That's good. That's important.
I missed it if you mentioned this already, Clima, but I like us to talk about healthy sexuality.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
And encouraging people to be more aware of their bodies and what pleasures them.
Right.
And I want to connect, important, in our conversations, connecting masculinity and men to this discussion.
Yes.
And who we are as a gender and what we do and how we think and how we behave and what we pass on and what we do, because you can't. It's like having a discussion about racism without white people.
Right.
Doesn't work.
Right. Doesn't work.
It just don't work.
So did we have 2 minutes left in this segment? Let's get that last caller in very quick. Darlene, your very quick final thought for the day.
Real quick. I know people have trouble thinking of this as a cultural problem. From the beginning of her life, I taught my daughter she couldn't wear tight pants without a long shirt, because there were people out there who didn't know how to manage it. But I was also teaching her she had to somehow take responsibility. I also taught her to recognize what was around her. And as a young adult in her late 20s, early 30s, living in New York City, one day she called and she said, "I can't take it anymore. Walking down the street, I see 30-foot-high photographs, advertisements of men's underwear that are very full, and I'm subjected to that. And I see women in such scanty clothes that it's like my body's on display everywhere I turn."
Totally.
She could feel the assault because she was trained to recognize the world around her. It's terrible.
I'm sorry, we're just out of time, but that's why I want the discussion to have happen so Darlene can call in, others can call in, say what they have to say, and we can have in-depth conversations with everyone about what just happened and what she's describing, which is exactly what we want to talk about.
Right, exactly.
So I want to thank the two of you so much. It's great. Kalima Young, Desiree Melton, it's great to have you both in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate the opportunity.
And looking forward to this conversation coming on the air for hour-long discussions across the next few months. These are really important.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for writing and calling in and making the show what it is. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Henry. Our producer is Amani Spence. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Warren Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org, the podcast, The Mark Steiner Show, and share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.